Hi guys, Robert here. We have some exciting things happening here on Mushing Radio. We just got back from Podcast Movement 2017 and we learned a lot. We look forward to sharing many new things with you. Now let's kick off the show.
Dog Works Radio Network presents Mushing Radio, hosted by Robert Forto. Mushing Radio is about dog-powered sports, living in the Great White North, and mushing. Visit our website at mushingradio.com. Here is your host, Robert Forto.
Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Robert Forto, and you're listening to Mushing Radio here on KVRF 89.7 in the Matsu Valley. RadioFreePalmer.org is our live streaming site, and you can find us over on iTunes. Just search for Dog Works Radio. And while in iTunes, do us a favor and hit that subscribe button and send us a five-star review. On today's show, we continue our Mushers Legend series, and Alex Stein talks about one of the founders of the Iditarod sled dog race, Dorothy Page. Here we go with Alex.
Dorothy Page is one of those people in mushing who is an absolute legend. She was born in Minnesota in 1921, and as an adult, grew up, moved to New Mexico, and got married, and came to Alaska in 1960. She was always a history buff, not a professional historian, but a very strong amateur historian, and became enamored of the history of Alaska and the sense of that it was really a place that was a little bit larger than life. She saw her first sled dog race in 1960, shortly after she came to Alaska, and was immediately hooked. She befriended some of the mushers, did what a lot of people who are new fans of mushing do, which is ask a lot of questions, learned about the history of mushing in rural Alaska. And just briefly, there had been a very long history of using dogs and dog sleds in rural Alaska in the interior, where most of the communities are not on the road system. And during the winter, it can be very difficult for small planes to come in and out. So at the time, there was an extensive system, and there was still a lot of mail delivery being done on dog sleds. But the dog sleds were becoming a little bit less ubiquitous because more and more people were embracing the use of snow machines, which were thought to be more modern and sensible and reliable, and you just fed them gasoline and you didn't have to worry about them being in heat or needing kibble. So Dorothy came to Alaska, and she became the president of the Wasilikonik Centennial Committee. And that was formed to try to find ways to celebrate the centennial of America buying Alaska from the Russians. And there were meetings and there were a lot of discussions about how best to do that. And Dorothy Page had become interested in the historic Iditarod Trail, which longtime listeners may know, starts in Seward and passes up through Kinnick and Wasilla before it heads out into the wilderness across several mountain ranges and beautiful terrain, and eventually out to the coast and up to Nome. This is a system of old trails that have been used for thousands of years by natives and later fur trappers. The discovery of gold really put many, many thousands of people on the Iditarod Trail in the early 20th century, and there was a system of roadhouses built along the trail with facilities for human and canine travelers. And these roadhouses were designed so that they would be an easy day's travel away, so that you would always be able to go from one roadhouse to the next and have a place to sleep. So they were on the trail approximately every 20 to 25 miles. And many of the accommodations in these roadhouses were very primitive, often just blankets spread over hay on a bunk, but they did offer protection from the wind and weather and usually served hot meals. So the gold rush burned itself out and dissipated, and then World War I took many prospective travelers and gold miners away from Alaska, and over the decades, sections of the trail started falling into disuse and disrepair. The 1925 diphtheria outbreak in Nome changed that temporarily, as a relay of 20 drivers and dog teams carried Serum 674 miles in just over 5 days. And we've talked about that on the show before, and we'll talk about it more in the future as well. So that was a temporary reprieve, but by the 1960s, the Iditarod Trail was again in disrepair. Forest and tundra had reclaimed much of the area, but for Dorothy Page, she thought this represented what was iconic about Alaska, and a dog race along part of the Iditarod Trail would be the best way to celebrate the centennial. So she lobbied to make dog sledding an essential part of that celebration. She was particularly enamored of the All-Alaska Sweepstakes, which was a race run from 1908 to 1917 that went from Nome to Candle and back, a distance of about 400 miles. The Nome Kennel Club, which put on the race and which incidentally was founded in a saloon, wanted that race, the All-Alaska Sweepstakes, to demonstrate excellence for dog drivers over a variety of terrains and areas, and also to help improve the breeding of sled dogs, which up until then not a whole lot of attention had been paid to. And these races featured mushers like Scotty Allen and Leonard Cephala, who was part of the Serum Run, and each of them won the race, the All-Alaska Sweepstakes, three times. By the 1960s, the Kinnick and Wasilla were barely blips on the map. And these days, Wasilla is a thriving city, and it has multiple big box stores, and there's a lot of traffic, especially, in the morning and the early evenings. But this is a largely recent development. And in the 60s, the area was a place where land was relatively cheap and available, and it was home to quite a few diehard mushers who didn't want to be part of the big city of Anchorage, which, you know, to be fair, at the time was still what we would call in the lower 48, sort of a medium-sized town. Page tried to get support from the mushing community, but she was viewed as a bit of an outsider. She wasn't a musher herself, and she couldn't get any of the mushers to agree to commit to competing in this centennial race. And then she met Joe Reddington Sr. at the Willow Winter Carnival. And Reddington was already familiar with the Iditarod Trail, and he'd been trying for years to get it declared a National Historical Trail so that there would be more attention paid to it, it would be easier to protect, and people would know about it and the history. And Joe Reddington Sr. already had a history himself as a dog man. He owned a large kennel in Kinnick, and he had been training dog teams doing search and rescue operations for the Air Force. So he also thought that dog sledding would be an ideal way to celebrate Alaska's centennial, and he too was worried that snow machines were going to continue to make having dog teams and going around by dog sled something from the past, and worried that this would vanish for good. So the two of them, Dorothy Page and Joe Reddington Sr., decided that they were going to team up, and he was able to convince other mushers to compete. And he had military contacts who would help him get parts of the trail in place so that they could run the race. His one demand was that there had to be a $25,000 purse. He knew that without a large purse, it would be hard to get mushers to sign up. And Dorothy Page agreed, although she wasn't sure at the time where the money was going to come from. So with the help of Reddington and his wife, Vi, Dorothy Page was able to get community leaders and businesses in line and raised the $25,000 they needed. Her original plan was to have a much bigger race, and perhaps to have a race of several hundred miles. At one point, it was discussed that maybe they could actually go to Iditarod and then turn around and come back to Kinnick. Then there was talk of having a 100-mile race to celebrate the 100th anniversary of Alaska being acquired from the Russians. But eventually what they compromised on was a race that went for 28 miles from Kinnick up to Big Lake, which is right near where today's Iditarod has its restart, and then back. And the up and back was a nod to the All-Alaska Sweepstakes, which went up from Nome to Candle and then turned around and came back. The route included about 9 miles of the original Iditarod Trail, which was cleared and refurbished for the race. This race, which sometimes is referred to as the Centennial Race, was officially named the Iditarod Trail Sepala Memorial Race. And there were 58 teams who competed in 1967, with Isaac Oklizik winning. And by most measures, this was a big success, and Paige planned to make the race an annual event. She said that they had added Sepala's name to the title of the race to give it a sense of history, but they could have just as easily chosen to put Scotty Allen's name in. But perhaps because of Sepala's important role in the Serum Run, it was decided that it was important to honor him rather than Scotty Allen. And things were looking great for the race after the first time it ran, and there was talk about expanding it and lengthening it. But then 1968 was a year that didn't have much snow, so the 68 race was canceled, and the momentum that had been building was largely lost. The race was held again in 1969, but there just wasn't the same level of interest and enthusiasm. They could only raise $1,000 for prize money, and as a result, only 12 teams entered. So Dorothy Page, who had a lifelong interest and devotion to dog sledding, was never a musher, and she returned to her original love of history and investigating the history of Alaska. But Joe Reddington was not quite ready to give up on the idea of this great race that would celebrate the All-Alaska Sweepstakes and really celebrate the iconic use of dogs and dog sledding in Alaska. The two of them kept in contact. He was always more of the visionary dreamer, and she was more practical and able to bring her deep appreciation for history and her sense of organization as a way of supporting his vision and his plans. And together, they made a really great team. If you think about it, without a vision and a dream, things are often dull and they just run the way they're supposed to run, but they don't become great or really inspirational. And on the other hand, if you don't have someone who has a sense of the practical and can do logistics and get things done, it's hard to turn big dreams into reality, let alone form something that would sustain for decades. Dorothy Page recognized that the need to have a formal organization to support the Iditarod was very, very important, and that it couldn't just rely on Joe Reddington and what he wanted and promised people. So she was one of the founders of the Iditarod Trail Committee, which is the group that oversees, organizes, and promotes the Iditarod. Reddington also recognized how valuable she could be in helping to spread the word about the race, and he asked her to write and edit a publication called the Iditarod Annual, which celebrated the race, the history, the mushers, the trail itself, and Alaska. She also helped to start the Mushers Hall of Fame in Kinnick. She served 4 terms on the Wasilla City Council and was elected mayor of Wasilla in 1986. She was president of the Wasilla Kinnick Willow Creek Historical Society and curator of the Wasilla and Kinnick Museums. She died in 1989 at the age of 68, and she's buried in the Wasilla Aurora Cemetery, where the first thing on top of her headstone is the words, "Mother of the Iditarod." There's also a large mural in downtown Anchorage right near where the ceremonial start of the Iditarod is that includes the names and finishing times of all Iditarod winners, and it features very prominent large portraits of Joe Reddington Sr. and Dorothy Page. And after her death, the Wasilla Museum was renamed the Dorothy G. Page Museum in her honor, and eventually she was named honorary musher for the 1997 Iditarod. As many longtime listeners know, bib number 1 in the Iditarod is reserved for the honorary musher or a family member if the musher is deceased or can't go on the sled for the first few miles, and then the competitors in the race have bib numbers that start with two. It's probably true that Dorothy Page is not as well known as she might have been if she had actually been a musher. There's definitely more mystique and romance about someone who guides a dog team 1,000 miles than someone who researches history and helps with organization and logistics. And while most Iditarod fans know about Joe Reddington Sr., it's a sign of respect for the support for the sport and the history when someone knows about and is interested in Dorothy Page. To this day, the Iditarod continues to honor Dorothy Page by giving an award in her name, the Dorothy G. Page Award, for the first competitor to reach the halfway point of the race. And it didn't occur to me until literally this week that having this particular award is a great way to honor Dorothy Page, because the centennial race that she staged with Joe Reddington went from Knik to Big Lake, and then it turned around to head back, just as the All-Alaska Sweepstakes went from Nome to Candle and then turned around to head back. So in a way, naming the halfway award for Dorothy Page honors her centennial race and provides a chance for modern Iditarod competitors to pause just for a minute and be honored and honor her. Only now they don't turn around and head back. They keep going, pushing forward, ever forward, until they get to Nome.
Excellent, Alex. Thanks for the recap on Dorothy Page. A couple of quick thoughts on my end. As you were telling the story about the first race, what was that, 67, right?
Right.
$25,000 for 28 miles, is that right?
56, 28 there and 28 back.
Wow. That's a heck of a purse, isn't it?
Yeah. And, you know, I think, I'm not sure what the exact cutoff point is, but I believe that that is considered, 56 miles would be considered more of a sprint race than a long distance or medium distance race.
Yeah, it would be a long sprint race, but still, for that kind of purse, no wonder they had so many entries in there. Then, of course, you said the following year it was canceled. Then the next year, I guess it would be 69, they could only raise $1,000 and only 12 people showed up. That sounds like mushing to me. A lot of people show up for the purse.
Right. And, you know, when we talked about the first Iditarod in particular, one of the things that Joe Reddington knew even before this 67 race was that for a new race, if you wanted to have a lot of people and you had to attract attention, you needed a fairly big purse. And that's why he was adamant about making sure that there was a big purse for the first Iditarod, to the point where he made a lot of public promises about how much money would be available. And when the race started, he had not yet completely raised all of the money. And that's part of the reason why he didn't compete in the first Iditarod. He was still raising money, which eventually he managed to get before the first team came in. But, you know, in the initial part of the race, people weren't actually sure if the money that was promised for the winners and for the top finishers was even going to be there.
And you know what else is interesting, Alex? A lot of folks that come up for tours or whatever visit the Iditarod headquarters, which is just outside of Wasilla, Alaska, about 3 or 4 miles to the west. But, you know, a lot of folks have not seen or visited the Dorothy Page Museum, which just happens to be in the middle of downtown Wasilla. And it's these little log cabin type buildings, sort of old timey Alaska type buildings, but it is surrounded by modern population. There's a Cars Safeway store just to the right of it. There's the post office there. There's restaurants and bars and all sorts of other shopping right there. But it's really interesting because if you enter that little area of Wasilla, time literally stops there, and it takes you right back to the early days of Alaska.
Yeah, it does. And it's funny because when I first went through Wasilla, which was in 1995, it was still a very, very tiny community. This was before most of the big stores and most of the commercial development had come through. And I remember coming back to Wasilla 15 years later and it was you know, it was a city. And I think it was much more of a small town when I was there, even in 1995.
Right, right. It's definitely growing now. Every year we get a little bit more. As you mentioned, there are all the big box stores now, Walmart and Target and Fred Meyer's and everything. So while it still is a small town in regards to most of the United States, it's still, you know, kind of a thriving community here in Alaska. And it's just amazing how much history is in that little community. And then, of course, in terms of Iditarod, that's where it all happened, in that little community back then in the middle of nowhere.
Right. And I'm not positive, but I believe that the Iditarod headquarters is either on part of Joe Reddington's original homestead or right next to it.
That I'm not sure. I know that that their current homestead is a ways down the road there, and they have the Mushers Hall of Fame there in a little barn house looking building right offside the property there.
Yeah. So again, anyone who is in the area, I would definitely encourage you to visit both the Iditarod headquarters just up the road in Kinnick and the Dorothy G. Page Museum in Wasilla.
All right, guys, we're just about out of time. But before we go, Alex, how do folks find you on social media?
I am on Facebook at Alex M. Stein, and people can find me on Twitter. I'm on Twitter a lot, at Coldfoot Films.
And I am at Robert Forto, and you can follow our page at dogworksradio.com. We're also on social media under the same name as well. Alex, it's been a pleasure. We'll talk again soon, okay?
Okay.
And that was our show for this week, where we talked about Mushing legend and Iditarod co-founder Dorothy Page. If you like Mushing Radio, do us a favor and tell your friends about us. Go to iTunes and give us a 5-star review and hit that subscribe button, and we'll see you guys next time. Goodbye.